Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us here at City Club today. It's a very special time to be gathered together in the time of our city and the time of City Club. We have today with us a very special and distinguished guest, and we'll be doing a fireside chat in just a moment. And it's one of the things that I've always said to folks when they come consider speaking at City Club. This is one of my favorite formats because it's very conversational, and we're going to give everyone a chance to ask questions as we go along and as we get towards the end. But without further ado, I wanted to invite Deborah and Dan to come up and let them get started. But I also wanted to just say thank you so much for being here. Every time that you come to a City Club event, it matters. It makes a difference for our community, for our city, and we are very committed to the purpose of producing better public policy outcomes, and I believe that we've continued to do that across a variety of topics. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me over the past months saying, gee, I really loved that panel on youth mental health or on food insecurity or, fill in the blank. And we have a lot of important topics to continue to cover. So thank you for your support of that. Hopefully we'll also see you all on November the 16th. We will be hosting our amplification event, which we'll tell you a little bit more about later. But without further ado, Dan and Deborah, if you would join us, please.
Thank you, Omar. Omar D'Agostini, our board member, Ed Mazur. Dr. Ed Mazur is also here, our chair emeritus. Dr. Mazur, thank you for joining us. On behalf of the Board of Governors of the City Club of Chicago, and our chair, Jackie Robinson Ivey, I'd like to welcome Deborah Witzberg.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Chicago's Inspector General. It's clear, at least clear to me, that you're a very busy woman. most of us read the news and see it every day. So we really do appreciate you taking your time here to tell us a little more and dig into what you're up to, what got you here, what drives you, and hopefully we can get a lot of that out in this somewhat short conversation with maybe more to come. So, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Let's get right to it then.
Okay.
Okay, before we get right to it, if anyone does have questions, we're going to do things a tiny bit differently today because the Inspector General has agreed to have this open conversation. And if you notice, we're kind of seated in a different setting, and we do have a couple of microphones, and this is a rarity at City Club. And instead of just written questions, after we have some of this conversation, we are going to invite at least a couple of audience members, participants, club members to raise your hand and ask for the microphone and ask a question directly of the Inspector General. So hopefully your wheels are turning and you've got some good questions that we can get to, and she has so kindly agreed to do that. So let's just start with how did you get here? We're at City Club of Chicago. You're from Boston, right?
I am.
How'd you get here? And you can take that any way, other than saying I took the L or a Divvy bike. You can take that in a whole host of directions. How'd you get here to City Club of Chicago?
Well, in the beginning, I went to law school. I came to Chicago to go to law school. I went to Northwestern, and I went to law school knowing that I wanted to do public interest law. I wanted to work in public service. I spent about 6 years as a Cook County prosecutor. I loved that job, and there are many things about that that are the best job there is. I sort of got to be ready to leave the state's attorney's office but I had no intention of leaving public service or the practice of law in the public sector. And I guess I should say also I kind of got there by way of a really, I grew up in a family that was really serious about public service, grew up with very clear expectations that you go off and do the thing you can do to make the world a better place. Those of you who have small children, if you have not read the book Miss Rumphius to your children, I would encourage you to do that. It's all about sort of finding the thing you can do to make the world more beautiful. And we read that book a lot when I was little. And so I suppose that the answer is that, like, the road to the City Club begins with Miss Rumphius. But anyway.
Sounds like a book you could write.
Yeah, well. In any event, so I was sort of ready to leave the state's attorney's office around the time that the city of Chicago was getting more seriously into the business of police oversight and public safety reform. That was work that I really wanted to be a part of. I you know, being a prosecutor is a very up-close view on policing. I felt like I had seen a lot of good in policing. I had seen a lot go wrong. And I really wanted to do the work of fixing the way we do policing in Chicago. I believe in the good police. I had worked with police officers I was really proud to stand next to in a courtroom. But as I say, I had seen a lot go wrong. And so that coincided with the city's kind of wave of police reform efforts that came about after the release of the Laquan McDonald video. And so that's kind of how the Office of Inspector General came to my attention. And so I came to OIG in 2016 and did a number of different things in the office, including doing our police oversight work for a little while. And then I've been in this job for about a year and a half. And I'm a big fan of City Club. I mostly come for the food, obviously, as I hope everyone here today has come for the food, I should say.
Please continue to eat as we have our discussion.
Yes. So here I am.
So policing was probably, it sounds like that was really your focus. Now you cover so many topics, right?
Yes.
Departments, city council. Maybe if you could just step back and for some of us who don't know all the particulars, could you lift the veil a little bit on the Office of the Inspector General? What is your jurisdiction? What are you doing on a daily basis? Potentially what aren't you responsible for? But give us a little insight into that.
That'll take less time. The Office of Inspector General is an independent, nonpartisan watchdog agency within city government, whose mission is to promote economy, effectiveness, efficiency, and integrity in the operation of city government. We have, sort of under our jurisdictional umbrella, come all city employees and officials, including the city council, all city vendors, contractors, licensees, and applicants to all of those programs, lobbyists for the city. So it's a very broad sort of jurisdictional umbrella. And we have jurisdiction to do both misconduct investigations that are both criminal and administrative, so all kinds of rule breaking. But we also do program and policy work, looking at improving the way city government operates and the effectiveness with which the government serves Chicagoans. We do not. There are some sister agencies in the city who have separate oversight structures. So we do not have jurisdiction over Chicago Public Schools or the Chicago Transit Authority or the Park District.
Okay. But let's dig in a little bit on city council. You do have jurisdiction over city council, right?
We do, both to investigate members of city council for criminal and administrative misconduct and to evaluate the programs and operations of city council.
Because at some point there was, or I'm not certain, but I thought there was an inspector general for city council. Is that not the case any longer?
That's right. There was an office of the legislative inspector general until 2016, when that office was dissolved and the investigative jurisdiction that it held was transferred to our office.
So I assume your budget ballooned at that point, right?
Magic, yes.
So how is that working these days, and how do you balance all of that with the administration, the civil servants, the departments, and the city council? I mean, I think just that alone is quite an undertaking.
It is
prioritizing
quite an undertaking.
and balancing those departments and offices.
Yeah, prioritization is very much the way that I think about this. There's more work to do here than is going to get done. We are not going to fix what is wrong with city government. So all decisions that we make are prioritization decisions. There are opportunity costs to everything that we decide to do, because it means that we don't do something else. And so when we make those prioritization decisions, we try to think about the things that have the most impact on Chicagoans and the things that, you know, the problems that most contribute to mistrust and distrust in government. The city of Chicago operates at a deficit of legitimacy with Chicagoans. And so when we are doing this, right, we are working on those issues, taking those opportunities where we can pay that debt down the fastest.
Sure.
And I think, you know, city council is certainly a very visible piece of city government. Much of how city government impacts the lives of Chicagoans flows through the city council. And so it's certainly an area of high priority for us. And there's a challenging history to that institution. It's interesting to be here on a day when a corruption trial begins at the Dirksen Federal Courthouse. Certainly not the first in the history of Chicago City Council.
It's not, and we kind of, you know, there's a murmur in the room. It is not. I mean, it is a coincidence, right? But it has happened regularly. Why Chicago? Why so much in Chicago? Have you seen it in other cities? Have you been able to compare? What's so different about Chicago?
There's certainly corruption in other cities. As you said, I'm from Boston. I certainly come by machine politics, honestly. Many cities have that history. I think Chicago does government corruption with the best of them. And it's a growth industry here. That's my husband's joke, actually, that it's a growth industry. I just have to give him credit for that.
Is he here?
He is here. He's the one with great taste in women in the back.
Ah.
Yeah.
Welcome.
And condolences.
Chicago
certainly has a culture of corruption. That's a real thing. We talk a lot about institutional culture. That's a very real thing. I think there are also some sort of structural things about the city council in particular which have gotten us here in terms of corruption. Two things really come to mind as we think about how Chicago got to be this place where, right, the Chicago way is a proper noun, not in a flattering way. And I think there are two things about the city council which come to mind, and if you'll just join me on this trip through the weeds here. One has to do with sort of the accountability landscape that city council operates in, and the other has to do with the way the job description for alders is set up. In terms of the accountability landscape, all city employees, other than city council members, have rules that govern their behavior. We have personnel rules, and we have department policies, and we have, CPD has rules of conduct. The fire department has a code of conduct. There are all kinds of rule structures in place before you get to the sort of criminal misconduct cliff. That is not the case for city council members. The city's personnel rules don't apply. There are not rules of conduct for city council members. One of the city council committees, I always trip over the name of this one, but it's the Committee on Committees and Rules, has jurisdiction over the conduct of members, but it doesn't have any processes in place for dealing with the conduct of members. And so that leaves us in this kind of accountability world where the only guardrails on the conduct of city council members are the ethics ordinance and the criminal law. And the ethics ordinance has been historically under-enforced. Which is to say, OIG has under-investigated potential violations of the ethics ordinance historically. That's something we're working hard to change. But that's sort of it in terms of the accountability landscape. And so where the ethics ordinance has been under-enforced, it's sort of the Wild West until you get to the front door of the Dirksen Federal Building. So I think that's one piece. The second structural piece about the job description of alders is that they are both conduits of and deliverers of city services in a very kind of logistical way, and they are supposed to be conducting legislative oversight for the city. That's kind of how the city is supposed to keep an eye on and keep direction over the way city departments operate and the way city actors do their jobs. They do that by way of city council committees. Those committees are funded, they have budgets, they have staff. The city, however, has taken the position that those budgets and those staff members, which are assigned to committees, don't in fact have to be used for committees, but rather can be used for the ward services provided by the chairs of committees. And so, really, we have this critically important function of the council for legislative oversight, which is kind of by design under-resourced in favor of this mini-mayor, 50 fiefdoms aspect of the council. And I think that is one of the things which, you know, provides opportunity for the abuse of power, much of which we've seen historically.
And is it getting better? I mean, do you feel like are you having an effect? Is it?
I was a Red Sox fan in the '90s, so I'm sort of like an optimist in my bones. I think it's getting better. I think that the kind of rise of enforcement proceedings like the trial we're seeing start today, that feels like bad news, but it's good news. It doesn't mean that the rules are getting broken more often. It means that more people are being held accountable. And I'm really proud of the work that my office is doing, the people doing that actual work. Many of them are here today. But they very much deserve a round of applause. Yes, by all means.
Recognizing. You probably don't receive a whole lot of thumbs up around City Hall, good, right? I mean, it doesn't, at least historically, didn't seem that way.
No.
But thank you all for all the good you're doing.
I appreciate that. I'm very grateful for the work they're doing, particularly around more serious enforcement of the city's ethics rules. Railing against unethical behavior in city government is not as good as enforcing the rules against it. And we are taking that responsibility more seriously and have seen in a very meaningful way over the last couple of quarters real enforcement of the ethics ordinance. And I think that there's all the reason in the world to hope that that makes a real difference. I think that it does.
And I imagine the more you do that, perhaps, like you said, that maybe some of these cases don't need to show up at the federal, not the Dirksen building.
That's right. That should be the deterrent effect of good investigation and good enforcement. That's true in law enforcement. It's true here, too.
Okay. And you mentioned the Chicago Way. There's a lot of talk about that, and there has been, and it's changed over the years, but there's a Chicago Way. It's what people, I got a guy, I've got somebody that does this or that. Would you say, is that the cause of the corruption, or could it be more of like a result of the corruption?
It is surely both of those things, and that's how culture, that's how institutional culture works, is that it's self-perpetuating. People have had all the reason in the world to think that they will get away with that sort of behavior, because they have. That's what makes effective enforcement of the rules so important. It would have been a totally rational assessment for the last many decades to say, look, I can break the ethics rules and the odds of my being held accountable for that are very, very low. That's a totally rational assessment. It's the same thing. I think it's interesting, having come at this work by way of criminal prosecution and police oversight has been very interesting, because there are a lot of kind of parallels and interesting comparisons to draw. We talk a lot about clearance rates and the importance of the police effectively investigating crimes. One of the reasons that's so important is its impact on the deterrent effect. That if clearance rates are very low for solving crimes, then there isn't a very good deterrent effect to prosecution, because people make this very rational assessment that they are unlikely to get caught for committing a crime. I've thought a lot about that in the context of enforcing the ethics rules, that if we haven't sort of gone about enforcing those rules with any teeth, then there isn't a lot of disincentive to breaking the rules. And so then that we have this sort of self-perpetuating culture of corruption.
And is it so? Or when what percentage of, or maybe what, even if it's an estimate, where are you hearing about this corruption? Is this public? Is it general public? Is it the city employees? How are you hearing about these, which then lead you to prioritize and investigate?
We hear from lots of different sources. We certainly hear from members of the public. We hear from city employees and officials. We hear from anonymous sources. We have made an enormous push over the last year and a half or so to be as visible as we can, to make sure that as many Chicagoans as possible know who we are and where to find us and how to get in touch with us, because we need to hear from the people who know best about what's going wrong. Our intake numbers, the number of contacts that we get from out in the world, have gone up tremendously over the last year or so, which, again, is good news that can feel a little bit like bad news. That doesn't mean that more things are going wrong. It means that more people are telling us about them, and that's a very good thing.
And we've talked a lot about the corruption and some of the negative investigations, that sort of thing, but a few things I've noticed is efficiencies in government, right? And looking at best practices or actually making recommendations. How do you draw that line from investigating and rooting out corruption, but then also suggesting or identifying ways to make government better?
Well, we have, the answer to that really lies in the extraordinary people we have working in the office. We have a number of different practice areas. So we have investigators doing our misconduct investigations. We have performance auditors looking at efficiency and effectiveness in city programs. We have people devoted to police oversight specifically. We have data analysts. We have lawyers. It's like bring your favorite lawyer to work day every day. And that allows us to focus on all kinds of problems and all of the ways in which we can make city government more closely resemble the one Chicagoans deserve, both by holding bad actors accountable when they break the rules and by doing what we can to make government programs more effective and more efficient. And so we do all of those things at once, and we work very hard to do that in a kind of interdisciplinary way, so that the things we learn doing one kind of that work inform the other kind. It is very often the case that when people are breaking the rules, when there are bad actors in city government, there are also inadequate controls kind of co-located with that misconduct, right? That one of the reasons people commit fraud, for example, is because there aren't adequate controls in place to prevent it. And so we often see those kind of co-located problems and we can get at them from more than one angle.
Also interesting that you're sort of partnering with those that are doing the work, but also keeping them in line and investigating at the same time, right?
Yes, it is interesting. That's a good word for it. Textured, as my mother would say. It is, you know, it's like the hardest part of this job by a lot. But the oversight enterprise succeeds or fails on the basis of our ability to manage human relationships, which I think is a hard-won lesson, but it's absolutely true. Other city actors are both partners in and subjects of our work. That is just the reality of the work that we do, and managing the nuance of that relationship is really hard and really important. If we're not all in the big picture, if we're not all pulling in the same direction, at least some of us are in the wrong line of work. But it is, you know, that relationship has to be sort of at the right distance where we can also hold people accountable.
I have a whole list of questions here. A couple have been pre-submitted by the audience, but I do want to also ask our audience here in the room to become part of this conversation. And we've got about 10, 12 minutes left. So I'm going to start with one that I know you can talk about for a couple of minutes while we've got everyone's wheels turning here. And here it is. This is from Gary Hendel. What is the OIG's institutional relationship with COPPA?
So COPPA is the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. It's one of the components of the city's kind of police reform, police oversight landscape. We oversee COPPA, like all city departments. Everything that is true about how we exercise oversight over other city departments is true of COPPA. It is also true that our public safety section reviews individual closed COPPA investigations. So we have this very sort of up-close, case-by-case review of police misconduct investigations conducted by COPPA. That's set out in the municipal code, where one of our obligations is to ensure that COPPA's investigations of CPD members are complete, thorough, objective, and fair. And where we find deficient COPPA investigations, we send them back and recommend that they be reopened.
Okay. And does the new Police Accountability Commission, how do they factor in to all of that, or do they?
They do. They are also kind of part of this policy reform apparatus. They are not an investigative agency. They conduct some sort of programmatic oversight of COPPA in that they conduct performance assessments of COPPA's administration, and they set performance goals. One of the realities that question sort of tees up is the fact that the police reform, public safety reform landscape in Chicago is a very, very crowded one. The good news there is there's lots of work to do. There's plenty of work to go around. The bad news is that it can be hard in a crowded field to kind of get things done. Little kids who play soccer, and when they started playing when they were very little, right, like little kids just chase the soccer ball around the field and they don't make a lot of progress. And then they start to get a little bit older and everybody learns to play their position and they move the ball a lot further down the field. That's sort of the moment we are at in public safety reform in Chicago is everybody learning to to play their institutional positions, play to their institutional strengths. And so with the advent of the commission, as that body sort of takes on its three dimensions, we'll sort of see, hopefully we'll see some progress there.
And I think we're known for having so many different layers of government. I guess that's probably just extra job security for you, right? Amanda's over here with a microphone. I know we have a couple of questions. I see three hands. So, Amanda, if you could take it from here.
Hi, Dave Lundy.
And please, well, Dave, you're about to introduce yourself. I was going to say, please introduce yourself, your name and organization also. Thanks.
Thanks. Dave Lundy with Aileron Communications, a clean energy public affairs firm. I'm wondering, you've talked a lot about public safety. You have a lot of experience in public safety. The number one concern about a lot of us is public safety. We spend an enormous amount on public safety, and particularly on the Chicago Police Department. I have felt for years that our biggest problem is the FOP in terms of getting reform. I'm wondering, though, purely from a government efficiency standpoint, it's a failure, no matter how whether you look at the closure rates or anything else. So, what do you see as your responsibility in the Inspector General's office to help us move that ball down the field?
I appreciate the question. This is an important, obviously hard to imagine a more important issue. I think the foundational observation from my perspective about the Chicago Police Department, probably policing in general, but certainly the Chicago Police Department, is that this is not a good system with a few bad people in it. It's a bad system with a lot of really good people in it. Which is to say, we are not going to discipline our way out of what is wrong with policing and public safety in Chicago. We certainly have to deliver swift and robust discipline when necessary, but we have to be attending to the sort of larger problems which make this bad system. We need to right-size the footprint of policing, and then we need to equip the police department to succeed at those things which come within that footprint. So we need to make good and thoughtful decisions about which public safety functions should belong to the police department and should be performed by police officers, and which public safety functions should belong elsewhere. We don't recruit or train or equip police officers to be social workers or crisis interveners or behavioral health providers. And we shouldn't be surprised when we get bad results when we ask them to do that. For as long as we ask members of the police department to be the first line of defense and the last resort to an ever-growing number of social ills without equipping them to succeed, we will get bad outcomes. And so I think that's what this is about. We right-size the footprint. And then we take seriously kind of operational competence and efficiency. The department has to work better. It has to do better at those things which come within that footprint.
Thank you. Amanda.
Hi, Jim Turman, Duskoka Turman, Strategic Communications. I don't know if you want to touch this or not, but the size of Chicago City Council, just Googling this, Chicago's 50 aldermen each represent, on average, 53,000 people. In New York, it's 166,000 people. In L.A., it's 256,000 people. Is the council too big?
I think the size and the structure of city council are those are fair game public policy conversations, because I think it would be a widely shared observation that things haven't been going perfectly. So, I think in terms of, the right number of council members, the right number of constituents, that's about striking a balance between an efficient operation and local knowledge. Local knowledge should power city government. And so we should have people who know Chicago's neighborhoods making good decisions, both about the provision of city services and in legislative oversight. And so, as I said, I don't have a magic number in mind for council members or for number of constituents. I do think that's the balance. It's about striking that balance. And I think that we absolutely should be taking a sober view at the size and the structure of the council in light of this challenging history that we've been talking about.
We do ask the tough questions here at City Club. We have another one. Yep.
I can shout.
No, please, actually, wait 1 second, just so we can make sure our online audience can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Louis McCarowitz from Guidehouse State and Local Government. I'm wondering what your magic bullet or your wave your magic wand reforms at the structural level would be if you could just instantaneously snap your finger and see whatever changes you would like to see across the city.
My goodness, that's going to have us here. Like, do they serve dinner here as well?
We're here for a while.
Yeah. That's a really good question. This is like not quite an answer, but this is we have to be in the business of more effective resource allocation across city government, both in the police department and elsewhere. I am not sure that a shortage of resources is the wall we're kind of hitting our municipal forehead against here. I think that this is a resource allocation problem. Reform takes resources. Good government programs, service provision to people who need it most, to most vulnerable Chicagoans, those things take resources. I think the highest responsibility here is to allocate resources that we have appropriately and fairly and equitably. And to do so in the light of day. That's no good comes from anything that happens in windowless rooms in city government. That has much to do with this troubled history. The city of Chicago has earned the benefit of no doubts. And when things happen in the dark, we've given generations of Chicagoans every reason to assume that bad things are happening. This is like a little bit of an unfair, I'm going to just like paraphrase an inspirational quote here. Ida B. Wells said, if we want to right wrongs, shine the light of truth upon them. That's the thing I would choose. That's what we're after here. So when we ask people who have abused the public trust to answer for themselves out loud, when we shove a policy decision kicking and screaming out into public view, when we make city data about how Chicago works, meaningfully accessible to Chicagoans, when you ask people to come up here on this stage and sort of pull the veil back, that's what we're doing. We're shining some light of truth. If we could do that, if we could shine some light of truth into windowless rooms in city government, we would have righted some wrongs. I think we will leave this city better than we found it.
And these lights are pretty bright here too, by the way. No, thank you for that. And you know, City Club, just like so much of Chicago, is no stranger to being affected by all of this. And we're equally. I appreciate the mention there that we are equally committed to kind of elevating these discussions and having you here doing that in such an open fashion is really refreshing. So thank you for, and you really are helping us to elevate that for the entire city. So thank you for that. We've got another one right over here.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Mike Glasser. I wear a few hats, but one is in the Neighborhood Building Owners Alliance. I want to ask about funding. And first of all, how big is your office? How many folks work for you and under you? And how challenging is the issue of funding, given that a body that you regulate or inspect is accountable for your funding?
This problem sort of goes to the heart of independent oversight. We have 124 budgeted positions. We will have all of them filled by the end of the year, I'm hoping. So, if not all of them, then vanishingly close. We have a budget which is set at a mandatory minimum percentage of the overall city budget, which is a really critical independence measure for exactly the reason that you say. You can imagine a world in which city council, the budget-setting entity over which we exercise oversight, might have complicated incentives when it comes to how well we would be resourced to do our work. Well, not complicated. Probably pretty uncomplicated. 0.14% of the city's budget at a minimum must be allocated to fund the Office of Inspector General. That leads to conversations in the budget season about the fact that that is a floor and not a ceiling, but that's at a high level how it works.
We do have one up front after, since the mic's back there. Amanda, do you mind bringing this one?
Inspector General, thanks for being here. I'm Kara Hendrickson. I'm at Impact for Equity, a law and policy center that used to be known as BPI. I wanted to pick up on your comment about shining the light of truth and the importance of transparency as a tool of accountability. And my question is about public safety and data in particular. I'm wondering if you can share with us what your office has done to promote data and transparency in the public safety arena and what else needs to be done.
Yes, thank you for the question. And Kara, thank you for all of Impact for Equity's work in this area as well. If people haven't seen Impact for Equity's work around traffic stops and traffic stop data, I would recommend that. Data transparency is a part of our mission that we take really seriously. Some of the data analysis work that we do is in the service of our policy work and our investigative work, and some of it is in the service simply of our transparency mission, transparency for transparency's sake. And so around public safety data, we have our information portal. If people have not had the pleasure of our website, it's igchicago.org. I would encourage you to spend a great deal of time with it. Part of that website is our information portal, where we have data dashboards, which sort of like put out for public use and view a great deal of city data, and particularly public safety data. That's critically important. There are enormous challenges around data quality in public safety. Police departments are not set up to be data gathering organizations, nor would we want them to be, right? We wouldn't want that to be anybody's highest priority when responding to an emergency. That said, we can't improve what we can't study. And so we've looked a lot at data quality, data integrity, and we've done a lot of work around making publicly available public safety data sources like reported uses of force, including their demographic dimensions, arrest rates, again, including demographics and neighborhood questions, a great deal of data around police misconduct histories, et cetera. So I think, data transparency, public safety probably is the area where data transparency feels the most urgent.
Hi, my name is Amy Dordek-Dolinsky, and I'm actually in recruiting. I'm not in the public sector, but I am a Chicagoan and a passionate city dweller. I've lived in Chicago my entire adult life, and I'm wondering I'm an entrepreneur in the city as well, and what can we regular, everyday Chicagoans do to complement? You only had 170 people or whatever you said, and you have only so many resources. What can everyday Chicagoans do to complement the activities of your office?
I'm delighted by that question. I think the work that we do around transparency is only as good, it only means as much as people are paying attention to it. If people are not kind of engaging with and consuming and sharing and talking about our work, then the sort of accountability tree is falling in the forest with nobody there to hear it, right? So I would be delighted to see as many Chicagoans as possible sort of engage with and talk about our work and share it and talk to us about it. I'm anxious for us to talk about our work. I'm even more anxious for us to listen to Chicagoans about what we should be working on and what people are most concerned about so that we can, back to the sort of prioritization question, so we can be directing our efforts at the things that matter most. But I think that's what I would say. I think a well-informed and engaged electorate and sort of civil society, we're not going to get anywhere without that. So I appreciate all of you being here today. I think this conversation is really important, and I think we would be very happy to hear from all of you and from your neighbors and your coworkers and so on.
One final question here, and then I think we're going to wrap.
Hi, Bill Mirovitz. How often do you get anonymous tips about elected officials, the police, other government officials that work in the city, and how big is your staff to do something? What can you do about anonymous tips?
We get a fairly significant number of anonymous tips, and we report this out every quarter. We report these out as a percentage of our total intakes. We have a devoted intake staff. We have four people and a supervisor. The biggest restructuring of the office that we've undertaken in the last year and a half has been around the way we do intake, and that is so that we have a devoted staff to take in information of all kinds from everybody who contacts us. We've had some very successful misconduct investigations arise from anonymous complaints. I am a fervent believer in protecting anonymous reporting mechanisms because people have very well-founded fears about retaliation. We didn't get here because we have a famously open and honest conversation about government corruption, right? And so we work very hard to protect anonymous reporting mechanisms. We get significant numbers of anonymous tips, and we've had some very successful investigative outcomes on the basis of those.
Great. Well, thank you again. There's, like I said a couple minutes ago, it's been such a refreshing conversation to have here, and and appreciate this format. I hope everybody enjoyed being able to ask these questions. Good. I'm getting a few thumbs up. As I have said before and will say again, there's so much more to come. And I think there's so much for you to do, but there's so much good, right, that you've seen. I appreciate you saying that. There's bad, but there's good. They're good people. There are good people doing some bad things. There's more good than bad, I think, was what I was picking up in that. And hopefully we're on the right track to making things better. And appreciate what you're doing to shine the light and help Chicago get lift up a little bit stronger and better. So thank you for your commitment to that.
Thank you for everything that you all are doing. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we hope to have you back
anytime.
There's so much more to come. And we hope to see all of you. We have some upcoming programs. Again, as Omar mentioned, on November 16th, we have our amplifications. We talk about illuminating and elevating. We have our amplification. We're going to amplify some of the great work that some others are doing at an evening event on the 16th that we hope you can all join us for. And we'll see you all back here soon. Thank you again to our Inspector General of Chicago, Deborah Witzberg. Thanks, everybody.